Okay, the reason why we came here, or why I initially decided to come to this Econux conference, was that Indie Media seems to be very much a free software project, not only in terms of using free software for the websites we run, but also in the way we approach things. And we wanted to hear from people who are not that involved in Indie Media what they thought about our approach to organizing, to producing things, news, code, relationships, networks. So we are hoping for a discussion here. We are hoping for some input to take back to our collectives. Now, I have to add something to the introduction. There are some people from Indie Media Austria here. I don't know who exactly is from Indie Media Austria, but I think if you disagree with things that we say, or if you want something to add from your point of view, of course that's great, because we're going to introduce Indie Media as a project to start with. And also we thought that Indie Media Austria is in a very interesting situation right now. I don't know much about it, but we should find some space in these 3 hours to talk about Indie Media Austria as some sort of case study as well. Because I think the clashes that happen in your collective are not singular. Lots of collectives have exactly the same problems. And I think that would be interesting for the free software community as well to see what other related projects are having to deal with. Now, we were a bit late with setting up the technology, so we have to find the right website. But what you see here is an Indie Media tool. I don't know. It's a bit difficult to talk to this group because I don't know how well you all know Indie Media. Is anybody here who hasn't worked with Indie Media? One, two, three, four. Okay. Everybody else knows how to use Indie Media. Cool. Okay. The website that Martin just showed is our wiki. We're using that increasingly. It's a collaborative content management tool. And this is the introduction site, but now we are going to local. And from local, we are going to IMC London. Local, Europe, and then IMC London. Up here. And at the bottom of IMC London, there is a link to IMC Writing. Indie Media is a network of, by now, 130 websites on 5 continents. And each website is run by an autonomous collective. The websites produce alternative information on open publishing newswires using free software. We'll have to show you the newswire in a moment. Can you just go to... Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Now, some keywords about the Indie Media websites. What you see here is the Indie Media UK website. It's a network of about 10 groups in Great Britain who all have their own local collective and their own website. And this is sort of the central site where good features from the local collectives are going published, are being published, but also some people produce features just for that site, things that are of general interest for everybody in the UK. If you look at the website, each website has 3 columns. The right-hand column is the Open Publishing Newswire. So if you press on Publish Your News, you can publish an article, you can upload a picture, a video, an audio file, whatever you like. Then in the middle column, you see what we call the features. That's texts that emerge from information that is posted on the newswire. So if there's a lot of things on the newswire about social centers, some people get together and write a feature about it. Same happened with ID cards protest. There were a few things on the newswire over time, and somebody initiated a feature. And on the left-hand column, you see a long, long list of indie media websites. You see the at the top, you see the different UK websites from indie media. Then there's a number of projects. Then there is the list of indie media centers. And after that, at the bottom, there are links to all the indie media email lists and several websites that are used to support the entire project. Now, a question that we get very often is how do these middle column features, how are they being produced? And that's quite interesting. We have lots of email lists. Indie Media, the global network of Indie Media, has about 700 email lists right now, as far as I know. Probably lots of them are dead, but some of them are very active. One of these lists in the UK is Indie Media UK Features. And people subscribe to that list, and then anyone who wants to propose a feature can put an idea in that list. And either somebody takes it up and develops it further, adds some links, does some research, makes the text nice, finds a picture. Often that's several different people. And it gets posted. Or everybody ignores it and nothing happens. But the interesting thing is that everybody, even people who are not part of the Indie Media UK collective or a local Indie Media collective, everybody can propose something and everybody can tune in and start working. Of course, sometimes there are conflicts. Sometimes somebody proposes a feature and other people don't like it. So then the consensus process starts, with lots of discussions forward and backward. Discussions happen on the feature's email list, but if it is a big issue, then people discuss it on other lists as well. People from London might decide to discuss it on the London list. People from Sheffield might discuss it on their own features list. Then there is an IMC process list for internal processes where decision-making structures are being discussed. But apart from the email list, there's also a chat room. Indie Media has a chat channel, ircindiemedia.org, with usually, I think it's about 60 channels open, 60, 80 channels. And lots of people go there and meet and chat about things, sometimes more personal and silly and gossipy, sometimes very, very work-oriented. So that's another place where consensus emerges, where consensus is being made, basically. Did I forget something? We have the lists, we have the IRC, and we have the wiki, of course. You know the site that you saw earlier, the content management tool? I don't know if people are familiar with that tool. It's a great thing. It's a website, but everybody can change it anytime. You don't need an FTP. You don't need to know how to use FTP. You don't need to know HTML. You just edit the thing through your browser, which means that it's become a very useful tool to track processes. If there's a big discussion on something, you can put the links to important emails, important websites there, and then everybody can change this wiki anytime, which means that if you make a wiki page about something that is not consensus, people will change it, and then you change it again, and it develops, and in the end, if it goes well, you have a really good resource about a process that has happened. They're used for all sorts of things. For example, if there are big convergences or big global protests anywhere in the world, usually some people get together and decide to do an independent media center, which is often a physical space, a real space with computers and cables and internet connections, where activists, journalists, demonstrators, protesters, locals can go and upload their news. But this needs to be prepared, and it happens very often on the wiki, because you can collect projects, task lists, addresses, maps, any information that anybody might need. So that's what we use the wiki for. Yeah, so in IndieMedia UK, probably like anywhere else, the entire website is moderated by volunteers. So nobody gets paid for the work that is being done on IndieMedia. People do it in their free time. Lots of IndieMedia people are working in very different professions. Lots of them are what some people have called immaterial labors, immaterial workers. So they are software producers, or they are graphic designers, or they are translators, or they are writers, or they are filmmakers, that sort of thing. Some of them teach. Some of them are unemployed. Some of them make websites. There are some social workers. Somebody is a shop assistant. So it's a very, very wide range of people. But the work on IndieMedia is being done voluntarily and unpaid. There are often discussions about the paying issue, because, of course, IndieMedia is by now quite a well-known project, and it's possible to fundraise for IndieMedia. But it is a very, very difficult issue to pay people to do that work, because if one gets paid, somebody else gets paid as well. And then the issue of power comes in as well. And so far as I know, there are very, very few IndieMedia centers who actually pay volunteers to do work. There was one case recently that I know of, but it was very, very, it was discussed in a very hard way, because I would be worried that if people get paid for IndieMedia work, it would be a real danger for the entire project, which works very often like some kind of miracle. And the power structures, we have our own power structures, but I think we are trying to keep them at bay, and keeping the money out is one of the ways to try to keep the power structures at bay. But there are arguments against that as well. Another important question that we get asked very often is the newswire. Sometimes people ask, why is there so much bullshit on the newswire? Because in IndieMedia UK, everything that gets posted goes straight to the newswire. It can be the British National Party. It can be some bullshitter who just has a bad day and has to get rid of a rant. It can be horrible. Sometimes they're also really good informations. So people ask us, why is there so much bullshit on your newswire? And the reason is that, one reason is that we can't watch it all the time. Another reason is that we have editorial guidelines, and we don't allow everything on the newswire. IndieMedia UK is not one of the IndieMedia centres that are hardcore free speech advocates. We have a bias, and we are very, very clear about it. In our editorial guidelines, we say that postings that are non-news, offensive, disruptive, repetitions, discriminatory, inaccurate, or advertisements can be hidden. Of course, each of these categories is very, very open. You can have a big argument about whether something is news or not. So we are constantly reproducing a consensus on what we accept on our newswire and what gets hidden. This open newswire is constantly under discussion in most IndieMedia centers, and it turns up on the global IndieMedia lists as well all the time. Because it basically represents the range between a completely open, free speech-oriented, free software, everybody can participate, completely open approach on one side, and a very straight, politically aware, rather closed attitude on the other side. And it constantly needs to be renegotiated. So the editorial guidelines are very important for us to show transparency. And we also have a mission statement. Most indie media centers have a mission statement, and everybody who wants to start an indie media center needs one by now as well. Our important thing is indie media erodes the dividing line between reporters and reported. And I think that's one of the points where a parallel to the free software production comes up. Eroding the dividing line between reporters and reported is a bit like the dividing line between users and developers of software. The next one, our attitude is assertive and where necessary confrontational. That's our political attitude phrased in a very open way. We have no ties with political parties. We found it difficult to state that. And Indie Media UK does not attempt to take an objective and impartial standpoint. Indie Media UK clearly states its subjectivity. So that's quite handy to have, because people often want us to be impartial and we can always say, no, we're not. Okay, yeah. Then the next thing is the software. The first Indie Media software was called Active, and it was written in PHP 3, and it was copylefted. That software was developed for activists in Sydney, in Australia, sometime before 1999. I don't know when exactly they did that. It was tested at June 18th, which was a global street party which happened in lots and lots of cities all over the world, in the financial centers of the world. One of them was in London. And this global street party was the place where this Active software was tested. We had one website with an open publishing newswire where people could upload things from all over the world, and that basically connected all the local street parties, local street parties into one big event. So we are talking about a global street party because we basically take the internet, the website, as a real space seriously. At that point, the Active software was not yet an indie media software because there wasn't any indie media center. It was finally implemented at the WTO protest in Seattle in November 1999, where lots of different, very different people came together to set up the first independent media center. Of course, there have been alternative media around for a long time. In the States, for example, there are really famous groups like Deep Dish TV and Paper Tiger TV, lots of radio stations, lots of newspapers. All these people joined forces to set up this independent media center in Seattle, and they used the Sydney Active software to get reports into the internet right from the streets. And it was this independent media center which basically helped to make this event in Sydney an event that was worldwide recognized. Since Sydney, the corporate media speak about a global movement, or the anti-globalizers. It basically made a movement that already existed to step on the political global agenda. And I think indie media had an important role to play in that. Now, I'm often wondering what made it possible for this to happen in Seattle in 1999, this sudden kind of new project. And I think it has to do with a synergy between three very different strands. One was the alternative media, community projects. One was social movements. People were very fascinated by the Zapatista revolution, which was called a revolution in the internet. Because you probably all know that the Zapatistas used the internet to spread their communiques like viruses all over the world, and they were read and received and discussed by lots of people and sparked off real space groups and movements all over the world as well. So there was a fascination with that. So the Zapatista was basically a local movement in Mexico, but there were lots of local movements in other places involved in the indie media thing, like the Sydney community that I mentioned earlier, or the community of Reclaim the Streets in London. That was a very, very local thing, but it sort of it fed into this indie media project. And the third strand that I find very important was the free software strand, because the people who developed that software were techies who developed free software. So there was this convergence and this synergy, and it produced a reproducible model. And I think that is another connection to free software. The reproducible model, I think that is another very important parallel to between free software and indie media, because the entire model to have a website with an open publishing newswire with a local collective that runs it, but open to everybody else to participate through lists, through meetings, through posting stuff on the newswire, anything you like, that is reproducible. And it has been reproduced a lot. From Seattle, I don't know what was the next one. It moved to some of the cities in the United States. People set up an independent media center in Prague at the World Bank protests. Was it World Bank in Prague? Yeah. Then we used the model in IMC UK in May 2000. We suddenly had an indie media center in the United Kingdom. And we basically used the same model. And we didn't have to pay for it. It wasn't patented or copyrighted. It was all there. And not just the software, but also the way to use it and the way to run it and the way to collaborate. Now, about our approach to technology, it's really funny. We are using lots of different kinds of technology. We're using lots of old technology. Lots of us have very, very old Mac computers. I used to work on a 486 until about 1.5 years ago. So we have old and bad stuff, but we also have access to satellite dishes, which is a really, really nice thing to use the sort of top technology and at the same time use the really old stuff. And the way we are able to do that is through blagging and sharing. Blagging is schnorren. Blagging means you go around and you try to get things for free from other people. And we do that all the time. And then the stuff that we blag, we use it collectively, which means that every mini disc player is constantly being used. It's constantly traveling all across London, but then also to other places. I mean, at some point we lent our mini disc player for audio recording to some people in Prague, and it took about 2 years to get it back, but it was always being used. So we multiply our resources, and I think that's another parallel to free software production. And in a way, the argument is always that free software is a digital thing and it can be reproduced without loss of quality or anything in infinitely. And in a way, we do that with a very material thing like computers. And it kind of works. Now, indie media, every indie media center adheres to the principles of unity, which is a set of principles which came out of a consensus process, and that was also really funny. There was a long discussion about indie media needing principles of unity. Lots of people participated in the discussions. The discussion was mainly in English, which is one of the problems in indie media. You know, we are such a non-hierarchical network, but we always speak in English, which basically excludes anybody who doesn't speak English. But the discussion happened, and lots of emails were posted, but the document was never finalized. So we have the principles of unity, and sometimes you can find it if you look for it through the wiki, the management tool. There is a link somewhere, but it's hidden on some lists, and sometimes the lists break and you can't find it anymore and you have to find it again. But we always take it very seriously that we have principles of unity. And in the version that I looked at, I found basically 7 important principles. One was the one about equality, decentralization, and autonomy. And I think each of these principles has, again, a connection to the free software mode of production. Because if you want to produce free software, I mean, all the little patches and projects people are working on are basically autonomous. Nobody tells them, you have to do that for this Linux distribution now. Somebody needs it, somebody does it. That's autonomy. We have autonomy in indie media as well. Then open information. We provide open access to information. That's very important. We have the open publishing. An indie media website that doesn't have an open publishing newswire is not an indie media website. But people are discussing what open publishing means, because there are different ranges of openness, and maybe the Austrian people can say a bit more about that later on. Then the IMC network and all local collectives are not for profit, which is the difference between indie media and open source, because for us it's very important not to be for profit, whereas for an open source project it's not a problem if somebody makes money with it. Then the participatory process, to be open for new people, to make it possible for new people to come in, to have openly archived email lists. We are trying to be non-hierarchical. We try to strengthen anti-authoritarian relationships. We organize collectively, and we are committed to the development of a direct participatory democratic process. And we are trying to be transparent to everybody inside indie media and outside indie media. I think that's again a connection, because free software is being developed quite openly on notice boards, on email lists. There is a lot of communication about things. And I think if somebody really wants to contribute to a project, they can find a way, which is the same with indie media. Sharing. We are committed to share our resources, which includes knowledge, skills, and equipment. And the source code is free. And although lots of indie media individuals are using Windows, because we just don't get around to using Linux and to learn it and all that, the website itself runs on free source code, and we do workshops to learn how to deal with the Linux operating systems as well. And different from free software production, one of our principles of unity is we don't want discrimination. I think most indie media centers are aware that there is always discrimination, just by the way we set ourselves up. In London, I must say, it's quite nice to see that I'm not the only woman, which is kind of a difference to this Econux conference, where I felt a bit lonely in the beginning. But for example, London is the most multicultural city I can imagine myself. And almost all of us are white. We had somebody Asian who worked with us for a while. She has left. We have some people who have sort of mixed parents, but we have an overwhelming majority of white people. So yes, we are against discrimination, but this is an imperfect world, and so indie media is imperfect as well. But the commitment is there. Right. So that was indie media in a nutshell. And the big question that I would like to put on over this discussion is, what can we as indie media learn from the free software movement? How could we develop to take on the things that you are considering and you are doing in your own development praxis? And maybe there are things that we are doing where you could learn. And I think later on it might make sense to talk a bit about conflicts within indie media, because as I said earlier, there are all these different strands, you know, the free software, some open source people, the political groups, and the alternative media groups, who have a very high standard of quality. And all these groups have different ways of organizing. very different ways of organizing from a maintainer model to a consensus model. That is a very wide range. And of course, that creates conflicts all the time. And maybe we can talk about that in the discussion a little bit more. Enough from me now.
Well, maybe it would be nice at first to just get some questions, especially from those people who don't know what indie media is, and you know, who might think things might still be there to be clarified, or otherwise any comments, and especially from those few of the media industry.
I have a short question. About these features, so you have told us that they are discussed, and how do you come to a decision then? What is listed there, and which order, and so on?
That's the absolute miracle. The order is easy; it's chronological. The decision. If you start an indie media, or when we started an indie media, we discussed about the features so long that they weren't very new when they went up. But it helped us to develop some common grounds about what we thought was important in a feature, formally and content-wise. That's one thing. Another thing is the Nike slogan. You know, you propose something and then there's a just do it thing. We have something like, we call it the 24 hours rule. So if I propose a feature on the Equinox conference today, and until tomorrow, same time, nobody has blocked it, then I can take it up. I don't know how do you deal with that in Austria?
You want to say something?
Normally it should be discussed on the mailing list, but and then there are so less people who are doing features that the most time we have a wiki where we can prepare the features, and the most time some people make the features and they put it online, and if there are discussions, there will be discussed after it's online. And there was some times that there was a feature on the web page, and then it was moved away, and then it was get there again, and discussions like this. But it's the problem is to have these discussions before, because if you wait for answers and stuff like this, sometimes it's more work, because you have to wait for the decisions, and there are the most time there are no responses. But if there are problems with a feature, so there it could be changed or removed.
Questions? Any other thoughts about how, you know, about the link between indie media and sort of Ökomux type themes? I'm sure that Marion and Martin will maybe talk about that a little bit later as well, but I think that would be a good thing to bring up here in this conference.
It's more than a question than an answer, but I'm interested in, I think, rather the same idea like you, the link between indie media and free software, and I'm not in the free software developing, I'm not a free software developer, so I can't answer it, but indie media has very much, or not just indie media, but any discussion boards has problems with so-called doors, so people who just want to destroy discussions, and I want to know if there is something similar in the free software developing community, so people who just want to destroy a project, or how to handle how the free software developers handle this, or perhaps there is no equivalent to the, to that.
This is a, as an answer to your question, this is an email from the archives of the features list, where the work to solve the problem that you were just suggesting is being solved, and it's simply just work. It's just people from everywhere around the island of England. I'm saying in this way because there's been a lot of discussions about what to call Indymedia UK, because it's not supposed to refer to a nation state or a kingdom, because people would want to reject those kind of structures. So IMC UK is actually supposed to stand for United Collectives. But this is an example of how it happened. So someone called Chip with an email, chappers@riseup.net, has written an email to the features list saying that he has hidden one entry, and he has said that it's because it's non-news self-promotion of homepage. So basically people monitor the newswire, and when these kind of things happen, they get hidden. And then we can take a look at what it is.
No.
So, well, there you go. Exactly the reaction that Marion is just giving there then often happens on the list, and someone says, no, that shouldn't be hidden, and then it gets unhidden, and this kind of discussion forth and back, and then sometimes there's a discussion about the guidelines for hiding or not hiding. And not so long ago there was a longer discussion about whether or not non-news should be hidden or not, and what constitutes non-news, and so on. So in some senses, yes, it's sabotaging the project. In another way, it's also an interesting challenge for self-organization, because value conflicts inevitably emerges, because you have a lot of gray zone areas, and some people think this is relevant and some people don't think it's relevant. So then you have a discussion about why it is relevant and why it's not relevant. You might not get to some sort of solution that everyone agrees to, and that's typical of what goes on in Indymedia. And Mayan also suggested that earlier, like many discussions take place, but you might not reach some sort of consensus and solution, but the discussions are ongoing and people learn through these discussions, which I think is a quite important element of the sort of self-organization issue.
Well, then I can also almost say it myself. But the fact that that no postings to the newswire are ever deleted, for those people that are not familiar with Indymedia, postings to the newswire can be hidden, but you can still view them. So you can go to the page where you will have all the unhidden postings and have a look at them. So things can be unhidden again, and can be hidden again, and unhidden again, and also people who, you know, who might want to have a look at what's going on. So it is completely open in that sense. Nothing is being taken away fully.
Which again isn't quite true, because recently there was some porn on the website. It was some war porn where you saw soldiers raping women in Iraq, which was hidden, but the URL was still there. And some friendly person from some other indie media told us about it, and we just deleted it. We left the post there, but we deleted it. I think we said something like censored, and I think that's completely in order. I don't know what other people think about that.
There was a question of the answers that the free software movement has to this problem, and perhaps I can say something on this if there is no other one competent here. We had a very interesting discussion this morning in this podium, organization, Herrschaft, ruling anarchy, and one important concept from the free software community is that of the role of the maintainer. So a maintainer is responsible for maintaining a certain piece of software or a whole software project, and also can make some decisions, and of course also has to cope with the problem that there are people that disturb this process, and of course the decisions should be made in a certain consensus, and there should be general rules what is allowed and what not, but in the ultimate sense the maintainer cares of that. And there was a very controversial discussion about maintainer versus democracy, so whether the maintainer is a monarch or not. And so one example from a related thing is the Open Theory project, where you also have a wiki there, and then it's a kind of free books or free development of free theory, and there are quite interesting theories being developed there, but at one time a very strange group of people with a certain fascist opinion opened up an own theory project there, and there was a very controversial discussion what are the limitations there. And also on the Equinox mailing list there is also this discussion what to do with the participants of the discussion which disturb. And I think there are some easy rules like spam is not allowed, but there are more difficult rules like when does someone disturbs discussion or not, and that's of course then important to be sensitive there, but it's also important to have some general rules which are really employed, and the maintainer has their responsibility to do this.
One question to the openness of the content. It seems to be very open. I'm wondering a little bit because I don't know the situation about the law in Europe, but at least in Austria, as far as I know, you are responsible for the content, so you have to remove certain illegal content. If you have a simple web page and you have a guest book, you are responsible what is in the guest book. It's crazy, but it's the law, at least in Austria.
Yes, it's an interesting situation. I mean, generally things only get deleted if there are also against some sort of moral position. But the thing about indie media is that it doesn't want to conform to all the structures that are existing in society. And it would have to come to a situation where somebody would try it in court. I mean, it did happen in Switzerland. Do you know about that story? I mean, somebody had posted anti-Semitic material, and then IndieMedia got sued by a Jewish interest group of some sort and had to shut down. But generally, it seems to function on a basis of trust among the people in the group who somehow decide what should be hidden and what shouldn't be hidden. And it's only if it's really very bad and not in our interest either, like pornography or racial hatred and so on, that it gets hidden and maybe even deleted. But the idea of indie media is that it's just a platform, and that there is no one who should be legally responsible for other people expressing themselves. So this is part of the challenge to society as it exists around us, that indie media is just a collaborative effort that provides some sort of platform for marginalized people and for voices that are otherwise not broadcast in corporate media to be able to be seen by others, and so it do you understand what I'm trying to get at?
I understand your intention, but I see the problem with the law. It's there.
Yeah, we have that problem. Recently we had it, for example, with Reuters, because we heard that Reuters has started some kind of web crawler thing that searches the web for copies of their own copyrighted articles. And then they threatened to sue everybody who's copied their article from somewhere. And that created a bit of panic on our email lists, because we have a discussion about reposting corporate articles anyway. And some people think, well, if they are interesting, they should stay there, especially since lots of newspapers who are on the web have started within the last 1.5 years to close their archives so that you have to pay for them. So sometimes people think that it makes sense to have a copy of a corporate article on the newswire, but there's a strong preference for self-written pieces that people have, you know, written creatively and produced creatively by themselves, because that's the voices we want to encourage. But this Reuter web crawler thing has intensified that discussion a bit. And as always, we never came to a conclusion. We never made a decision to implement a policy to delete everything that comes as a copy from corporate media. But I think people are watching out more. And we always have to find a balance between what I'm saying now and what Martin said earlier, that we shouldn't just stick back and comply with the laws. I think we should, for things like intellectual property, there is so much is fluid still, that I think it's really worth trying to push it a bit to the edges and see how far we can actually protect this idea of, I don't know, creative commons, global commons, and all that.
I have another question. How do you yourself position in the media against other alternative medias? Like, there are millions of weblogs and a lot of free journalists now around in the internet. So what's really the difference?
I think that in the media is a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But because it also has some sort of grounding in a physical reality and people in local collectives, it is a global network that you can travel through if you want to. Like, say you want to go and have a look at Colombia as a tourist, you can contact the Indymedia people in Colombia, and you already have friends there. So in some way it's completely different than just a weblog, because that is only in virtual space. But Indymedia is a collective of human beings that work also with a lot of local issues in wherever they may live. I don't know if you were asking for some sort of political position or...
No, just in general.
I want to add that when we started in the media in Austria, there was discussions about, because in the media is this global project and it is well known, and there was these discussions about the network, about medias. And in the media itself is a global network of different collectives all over the world, and the journalists or the people who are working, the media activists, are also working for other independent medias in every country and for projects. There are a lot of projects that are connected within the media, but they are like self-organized by local collectives, and not every of these projects is the same like in the media with this open publishing system. So there is the idea of making this in the media global network was to make a tool how to share information in a global way and make it available to other people. But if I'm searching very deeply information on stuff, maybe if there are deportations going on in Australia, or there are riots in the refugee camps there, then I can go to the IndieMedia webpage and I can find the links to the local webpages or newspapers where I can find analyses and deeper information. So there's always this connection. And when you see the features, we had the discussion about features. There is one thing about features, that there should always be links to other media, to other sources of information, of independent information. It should be mostly, but sometimes there are also links to commercial medias, mainstream medias. And this connection is there all. I think that the most people who are involved in indie media are also working with other medias, doing their videos or radio shows and writing articles for other newspapers or web pages and projects. And it is really a problem that there maybe is a hierarchy between all this project, but it's not the thing, because indie media can also be can open the way to that people can find other information. And the other thing is that the sharing of information is like when we look at the global web page now, maybe you can put it on the monitor. There was the most time there were English articles and features from the United States, but now there is a multilingual system and there are translations, and it's like a network to share information, to share what Marion told before, access to technology, and indie media couldn't exist without all these other projects who have this infrastructure already and used this for many years before indie media started.
That is actually an interesting thing about, because you were talking about how the, oh, sorry. You were talking about how the global indie media website has developed and how there is now a translation tool and it's becoming multilingual and all that. I think that might be a really important aspect of indie media, to be something like an interface between techies and social movements and alternative media. I think everybody who knows people who work as commercial software developers or even as web administrators in a company knows that it's always a problem to communicate between the technological stuff and the users. And I think what indie media does in these endless email lists and these endless chats is developing an interface between those who develop the code and those who are going to use the software. And it's very interesting. There is definitely a myth about techies in indie media. You know, oh, he's a techie means that, wow, he's really important, he's really cool, he's a techie. And you're almost grateful if they talk to you. Or if you go to the chat room and the techie says, he, Marion, I feel proud because I've been seen by somebody who is actually in such a different category from me. So there is a bit of a myth about it. And of course, if something goes wrong in indie media, like the email lists are down, the server doesn't work, you immediately, or lots of people immediately think, oh, the techies are plotting. They're trying to close the lists. They're changing things. They don't care for us. They are inconsiderate bastards. You know, it's this sort of Zuschreibungen, ist das deutsche Wort. Ich weiß nicht, wie man auf Englisch sagt. These projections. Yeah, projections onto the techies. And I know some of them who really try to fight off these projections by being very, very helpful and behaving a bit more like a butler or a mother rather than a king or a chancellor or something. So I think that the techie myth creates a hierarchy in indie media, But that is part of the process of becoming and developing an interface between people who know how the software and the code works and those who want to use it. And I think that's a crucial function of indie media.
I think what you just said is one of the most important thing about this question that showed up several times in the other discussions about the motivation of software developers, because they don't do it for fun, they also do it for the power they gain when they know how to run the machines and they know how to use the tools. And that's a definite difference to the people who use the tools. And I think there might be one thing that is a little bit theoretical, but might be very interesting, is in comparing the media, creating media to creating, is the difference that is to create media and to create software or to create tools generally, you know. So I think one of the point where it leads to has to do with this commercial thing that the media that indie media rejects to make money with the information, and that the software developers actually successfully make a bridge between the commercial software and between the commercial aspect and the non-commercial aspect of their work. So my question to indie media might be why to reject, what is behind this rejection to make money or to make business, not money but business, out of it, and what is about the conflict that is definitely here in the room between Indie Media Org and Indie Media Austria and Indie Media UK. I just got over this yellow paper. I don't know much about it, and I think I would be curious to know about it. And I think it also it probably has to do with some things that have to do with power and that have to do with fear and all that sort of thing. So I'd like to hear also about this conflict from you.
I can just quickly say something about the money issue. I think that it's quite sort of obvious, really, why indie media doesn't want to have anything to do with money, because, I mean, we all know the problems of money, and indie media doesn't want to, apparently, but maybe this could change if lots of new people came around and wanted to change this. And there's also a conflict within indie media about this, because there's a collective in America that have very elaborate financial structures. They're a registered charity, and other indie media collectives can buy their services if they want to apply for funding through official channels, and you need to be somewhat registered in one form or another, and so you can use their structures, which some people think is a good idea and other people think it's horrible. But the indie media is also about self-organization, and it's about people who are marginalized by society, who are disillusioned, who don't find another direction with their existence. Like it's about being there outside society where nothing else exists, where you can practice self-organization, which goes
I want
it's not so much business, no. I don't know, it's just I'm saying English. I think one of the successful things is that of open software development is that it got in touch with commercial world. That there is a strong connection in or something going on, however this will develop. Or so I think this is one of the exciting things also about open source software. And it's about getting... it's not a question, it was actually a statement. So I think the it's...
The question was, why is it a success that the open source movement makes money?
I think so. The open source movement gets more power. I'm not interested in the money, but it gets more... It gets spread very wide. Also,
but I find it interesting that you equate relationships and affiliations, associations with something outside, as based on money. Because Inimedia has a lot of associations with corporate media. There's at least an email every week to the UK collective from either a corporate journalist or from an academic that wants to collaborate in one way or another. But money is just not necessary to be able to have relations among groups or people, is it?
I would just add that it sounded like there was also in Spain, obviously, a discussion about what I would call NGOization of Indymedia. And for me, it was totally surprising that within this self-organized field of Indymedia, people came up and wanted to have this charity organization and become an NGO. That's totally naive standpoint, and it has nothing to do with self-organization. If you put up what we here in Austria call a Verein, that's really crazy for me. And it also goes with, on the other side, with the open source movement, if it's such a naive thing that if we put up connections to the market-based part, then we get some power. That's really naive. I don't see any point in that. So maybe also, if you're talking about we get into power or we get power, then maybe some certain concrete examples would be interesting. But I'm sorry, I captured the mic.
I would like to make one response or contribution about the money issue as well, and maybe then pass on to Tom. As Martin said, we don't need the money. I mean, we need lots of money, and for some reason we get lots of things without paying for it. That happens all the time. But I mean, it's a completely self-organized project which has spread from zero within 4 years to 140 websites all over the world. And I've been trying to think about a project that would be similar, and I just simply can't think about a single project, corporate or non-corporate, that can do that. I'm working in a big multinational market research computer-focused company, and I look at their way of using technology, and compared to what we do in Indymedia, it's bullshit. It's nothing. They can just about have a telephone conference. They don't know how to use chat rooms and wikis and lists and trusts and all that. So my reply would be, in order to get more power, we don't need money, we need very different things.
I don't know, should I explain now the problems of Indymedia Austria, or because I think it's a problem with the time, and there should be a movie shown, and maybe we should make a break, or I don't know, because maybe we need some time for this discussion. What do you think?
Maybe, yeah.
Yes, I also thought we should just raise the issue of the film again, which I'm quite aware of will possibly bring the discussion onto different sort of areas, because it's a film about freedom of movement, and I think the idea is to have some discussions about the relationship between the kind of the movement for freedom of information and the movement for freedom of movement. And so I think we should somehow finish this, but then maybe have a very short break, or start immediately with the film, by being aware of that the discussion will probably move into other areas. So everybody who wants to somehow contribute anything to this should sort of say something quickly now.
I think I would suggest maybe if we just stop the discussion here now, introduce the film, and then discuss this issue of the relation between movement and information, and then when that discussion gets boring or sort of waters out, in the end we can go through the Austrian conflict, and then if that discussion takes longer than we have time for here, we can continue it somewhere else.
Things more complicated, but I thought, is it, I mean, it's now, we have until 5 o'clock now.
Yeah.
And the film
shortly before 5 o'clock. Shortly before 5.
Right.
I'm not sure, but 5 o'clock is the next session here. I'm not sure whether this is shifted half an hour. Okay.
Because in that case, it might make sense if somebody would quickly just say what the situation is, so that we have maybe until 10 to 4 or something, just a few minutes to get people on the track about the main conflict of Indymedia Austria, and then we move on to something else and go back. Does that make more sense?
Okay, 3 sentences, something like this, to this discussion. It's a discussion, no conflict. It's a discussion every Indymedia collective has to answer. The question, what is open publishing and how to deal with this? And with more than 100 Indymedias and more than 100 ways to deal with this question, how to react to this bullshit coming to the open space, and there are the answer is from this is open publishing. You can publishing everything you want to on the Indymedia side, and on the other hand, there are the people who say no, we have to implement a way to block bullshit things on this. And for in Austria now we have to this is the one discussion we have to run through now, and the other is how to, so Indymedia is 2 years old in Austria, and so there is the other discussion, how 3 years, okay, how we want to go on and to organize the community is working on it.
When we made the Indymedia in Austria offline, there was some discussions about open publishing and how about free speech on two national meetings. One was in Bregenz and one was in Vienna, and the last meeting in Vienna, it was like 6 weeks ago, there was this discussion, and then nobody expected before that there will be this offline, but then it happened, and we made a lot of articles and stuff, and it's translated in English. Also, it's not finished, the English translation, and also this is the reader. There are not so many copies, but we can do some copies if there are not enough after. If you're interested, you can ask me. and you can read a lot of stuff there. And what I want to add is that it's not the conflict. Maybe it comes out there is a conflict between Austria in the media and UK in the media. Like, and I understand in this question, it's not a conflict between Austria and UK in the media. It's a conflict. A conflict between different opinions. How open should open publishing be, and how should be the censorship on the newswire? And there's also the idea, okay, we should. That the idea of hierarchy, the hierarchy between the people who make the media and the people, the consumers who read the media or see the videos and so. And this question is a very, very strong question, because my opinion, my personal opinion is that when I use a media like IndieMedia, I look, okay, which article could be interested for me? What information I like to read now, and I'm searching for this information, and then I see, okay, this is bullshit, okay, it's not worth to read, and it's not worth to read the discussions there. So if 100 of people discuss this and are very happy with this, they should do it, but it's not my problem. So I can read in the next article, and maybe it's with a lot of information. And one of the problems in Austria was that there were less articles written, so that there are less people who write articles, who write reports of their protests or what's going on. And if less people are doing this editorial work, or who are really breaking this border between the media makers and the consumers, then it's very easy to use this web page, and there are two less people involved in the Austria IndieMedia project who made the moderation, who looking for. There were a lot of denunciations, and there are people written their full names. So if this happens, then we stop this discussion, and we are censoring this. But there are not enough people who do these jobs, and the idea of stopping for around 2 months and start a discussion in the real life with meetings. We have 5 or 6 meetings, 2 already had happened, and 4 will be in the next times, and there will be a finishing meeting after, to have to involve more people and to show how IndieMedia could work.
Could you maybe just tell us the date of the next meeting, because there are so many people from Austria here, and maybe some people listen to the stream, so it might be interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that there is a stream. Okay. There was already meetings in Bregenz and Salzburg,
uh-huh.
And there are also reports only in German here on the table,
uh-huh.
And the next meetings will be on... No, wait, there is one before, in next week, on Wednesday. There is a meeting in Graz, and on Friday next week there is a meeting in Vienna. It's in Ammerlinghaus. And on the 5th of June there will be a meeting in Linz, and there's also a meeting in Innsbruck. There should be, it's the date and the place is not fixed now, and the conclusion discussion about the reboot is on 18th to 20th of June. We have not fixed where it should be. It's also one part of discussion, and there are online discussions at the same time every Friday at 7 p.m. In the media channel. It's written here. I can show you after, or you look at atindiemedia.org. There are all these informations as well, and it's also very good if people go onto the mailing list and start the discussions or make the discussions there.
Okay, thank you. Cool.
And if you want, you can read this information. And there are also some other informations here. The most is for free, but something is to pay, but you can show after.
Okay, I'm just going to say a few things. First, sort of in general about the theme of the film, and then the idea of the discussion afterwards. And then just before starting the film, I'll just say a few words about the film itself. So the idea of showing the film was that in some sort of way the thing that connects indie media and free software is that some people consider them both part of a wider movement that sort of struggles for freedom of information. And various attempts and gatherings and projects over the last few years have been organized around the issue of combining the struggles for freedom of information and freedom of movement. And so the film is about freedom of movement. It does not touch at all upon the issue of freedom of information. But the idea of trying to combine these issues are, on the one hand, to sort of bring the issue of freedom of movement to the general sort of free software movement, who might not really think much about this issue. And on the other hand, it's also simply because if we want to imagine a different world, it's not really enough that information is free. I mean, just because electrons and pixels can be moved around, if people cannot move around, the world doesn't really change that much. So in some sort of ways, people are kept down in the same way as software is kept down by proprietary licenses. You know, you need a passport, you need a visa to be able to go anywhere. There's also someone who couldn't come to this conference because of this. He didn't get a formal letter of invitation, and the whole process started much too late. And it's quite difficult for people to move around. I don't think I want to say anything more on all this theoretical stuff. If it's sort of clear to everyone what the idea is. Yes? No? Sort of. Yes, so the film has been made over 2 years. It started in Sevilla in 2002 at the European Union Summit. And then 3 months later, 2 months later or something, there was a No Border Camp in Strasbourg where the footage that had been shot in Sevilla was shown to some of the same people that had been interviewed there. So that's as close as it gets to an open source process, that we showed some of the earliest footage halfway through the process to other people to sort of develop the film into its next phase. And this is the first time that anyone apart from the three people that made it are going to see it, and it's not entirely finished. It is finished in terms of all the pictures and the structure and so on, but there are still some audio issues, so at certain points there's a lot of crackling going on. Fortunately, it's in one of the places it's subtitled there, so it doesn't matter that much, but it just to sort of warn you that it's not the perfect finished film.
Hello? Yes. And I mean, it is also, if you want an indie media film, it doesn't run under the banner now Indie Media UK or Indie Media Germany or whatever, but it is a completely independently produced, self-funded film. And yes, and we're going to distribute it through indie media-esque networks, whether that, you know, that might be indie media, but that can also be other sort of other grassroots networks that do screenings or that will work with media or whatever.
And just sort of to prepare you for the film, it is about migration, and it's particularly about issues internally to Europe. And it has interviews with both activists and migrants, and that's another sort of attempt to bring together different groups of people. So there are interviews with people who try to organize around the issue of migration, in the same way as indie media try to organize to sort of be self-organizing around the issue of media production. There are interviews with groups of people who organize themselves around the issue of migration and the politics of migration.
So, also, I would just like to say I'm possibly always too apologetic, but as it is the first time we show it, you know, we would like some feedback from you, especially if you have the feeling that at times it might be too random or, you know, too fast or not really worked out, some of the thoughts that are going on. So please sort of bear with us if you think that this film, you know, lacks in certain areas. You know, that's the idea, that we get some feedback from you on that as well.
So just put that into computer language. This is a debugging process. And I'm very sorry that it's going to happen in the evil Windows environment, but for some... Yeah, well, here we go.
À l'intérieur de l'Europe, il n'y a plus de frontières. Mais sur les bords de l'Europe, il y a encore des frontières. Il y a des gens qui ne peuvent pas passer.
Mmh. Et
c'est pas juste.
Et c'est qui les gens qui ne peuvent pas passer?
Ben justement, c'est des étrangers, comme par hasard.
Voilà.
Mmh. Qui veulent s'installer en France.
Ouais, ben ils n'ont pas le droit. C'est comme sa mère, qui est arabe, et ben elle ne peut pas aller en Suisse.
Mmh.
Elle n'a pas le droit.
Les enfants. Les enfants, ils peuvent faire la cuisine eux-mêmes. Enfin, ils sont autonomes et puis ils peuvent faire plein de choses eux-mêmes sans demander. Puis ce qui est bien, c'est aussi on peut manger à toutes les heures.
Et pourquoi vous êtes ici? Comment
Eh ben parce que nos parents, ils sont venus parce que ben, d'un côté, c'est pour aller au camp No Border, comme un an, dis-toi.
En gros, on est venu ici pour camper.
Demonstration here in Strasbourg from the No Border Camp, which will take place from now on till the next Sunday at Parc du Rhin here in Strasbourg.
I mean, the immigration issue doesn't stop there for the regularization. I mean, you know, the problems with work, with housing, with racism, with whatever continue whether you have the passport or not. It's not so simple.
For my everyday life, I have very little to do with refugees, as political work, but living with them, and this I think I will have to think more about. This is my own racism.
Particularly the sans-papiers here in France and so on and so forth, they are perfectly capable organizing by themselves, and if there's, you know, something, and they are the ones who know their situation and what they can do, what do they feel able to do, and so on and so forth. So I think it should be sort of the other way around, like for them to organize their own actions and then us to offer as much support as possible.
For me, the last year I've seen in so-called activism, there is lots to criticize about it. I don't believe it is more than masturbation, but it is less fun. I would like to be able to do things with them in common and be sure that they will not be taken away.
Yeah.
If the police or anyone will come and try to tear them from among us, we should think what methods do we have. And I think we should learn as a movement, if this is a movement, to be able to defend these people. Zufälligerweise hier in Sevilla, ich habe Urlaub gemacht und gehört, gesehen, dass da eine Ansammlung von Menschen wäre, und dann hat man mir gesagt, dass diese Kirche besetzt werden soll. Und da ist man in die Kirche rein und da war eine Trauungszeremonie. Irgendwie hat man beschlossen, anstatt die Kirche zu besetzen, sich in einen Hinterhof zurückzuziehen, sozusagen, weil man die Eheschließungen respektieren wollte. Und das finde ich eigentlich schade, oder? Hätte man gleich mit dieser Kirchenbesetzung noch ein paar Eheschließungen verhindern können, dann, ich lehne die Ehe als Institution natürlich ab, und ich finde es befremdend, dass dies respektiert wird.
You also called for a press conference this afternoon to read the communique and to talk about what's been happening here.
Y por otro lado, que entendemos, nuestra postura es que entendemos que continuar el encierro aquí nuestro requeriría un apoyo muy volcado de la gente de Sevilla, que realmente la gente debería volcarse en apoyar el recurso de gente al encierro de...
Elle disait que personnellement, quand elle est venue ici faire cette action, elle pensait que l'idée c'était de rester jusqu'à 8h et d'aller à la manifestation. Elle voudrait savoir si ici il y a un consensus sur cette définition de la zone.
So my name is Leila, I'm coming from France. Yeah, what I really like to say about this action and how we build it with the people here is that mainly the immigrants here occupying the university started really the counter summit, like doing a real strong action on this politics of immigration in Europe. They have been fired from their jobs. They had like since 10 or 20 years here, and coming here in Spain, they just find out that like, they don't have this job anymore, and they decided to stay inside the university and to get like a political sort of dialogue with the people here in Sevilla.
Two weeks can we have been here, and we are determined to stay here as long as possible, until our condition be perfectly fulfilled. Our claim be perfectly fulfilled. The claim is, as I told you, the claim is about getting residence. We are looking for residence.
As they were like doing this strong political action, we decided coming here too strongly enough, trying to make it strong, build something like in a mirror, another occupation coming from European citizens occupying a symbolical place and trying to reach outside the people and tell them that like we don't have our freedom if they don't have theirs. So this is the idea.
Cleaning the streets, cleaning your shit up and stuff, they're all immigrants. It's disgusting. I mean, imagine if the immigrants would go now from Europe, we would be fucked. Who would pick our olives that are orange? Do you think the Spanish people are going to go and do it? No way.
انا حقيقه العمل تاعي هو اعمل كمطعم عملي هو في المطعم شويز ان كويزينيي واتيت الى هنا عندي 8 اشهر لم اعمل جي با ترافايي جي دي سا ان عربي جي دي سا ان ميم تو ان فرونسي لي مو كو جاريف با دير جي دي ان فرونسي فوالا parce que j'ai l'habitude de parler français. Vous comprenez un petit peu? Oui, ma grand-mère c'est une française. Oui, voilà. Et ma mère elle parle souvent avec elle en français, c'est pour ça que je parle français.
You don't have paper, you work, your salary will be divided, completely divided. In a sense, just the middle, you will gain the middle of the salary, and the other middle, the boss will alright, keep that with him. Sort of a perfect exploitation. This is the situation we are living. Bad condition in terms of housing, bad condition in terms of salary.
Die Situation der Leute in der Universität, die das besetzen, das sind etwa 400, 430 Männer und eine Frau, die kann nicht schlechter werden. Die sind zum Teil seit ein, zwei Jahren im Land ohne jegliche Arbeit, also die haben kein Einkommen, die leben in Plastiksäcken und unter Kartons, in Kisten. Die können zurzeit vielleicht einmal am Wochenende, Samstag, Sonntag arbeiten, weil die Grundbesitzer wissen, dass es dann keine Kontrollen gibt, oder? Und ihre Arbeit wurde, bis vor einem Jahr haben sie gepflückt, Kartoffelernte, Erdbeerernte. Und jetzt sind Leute aus dem Osten, also aus Polen zum Beispiel, eingefahren worden und sie haben ihre Arbeit verloren. Einige davon waren seit länger als einem Jahr auf eine Arbeitsbewilligung. Die wurde ihnen nicht erteilt, aber auch keine ablehnende Haltung wurde ihnen mitgeteilt. Und somit kann man sagen, sie können nicht ausgeschafft werden, weil sie keine Papiere haben. Sie sind für die Ernährung sind sie abhängig von Roten Kreuz-Hilfslieferungen, vom guten Willen der Caritas oder sonstigen Hilfswerke.
J'ai dit et je redis ça, je vais partir, je suis venu ici à l'étranger pour avoir de l'argent et aider ma famille. J'ai 9 frères, on a 9, oui on est 9, la majorité des Algériens ils ont beaucoup d'enfants.
Ouais.
Ouais. C'est pour ça que je veux aider tout le monde, mes frères, j'ai deux frères à l'université pour faire des études à l'université. Hein. Oui ça coûte, c'est pour ça.
Ja, also aufgefallen ist mir natürlich, dass es Trotzkistinnen hat, die auch sehr populistisch reden, die immer von wir reden und die auch so Badges tragen würden, wir sind alle Migrantinnen. Und das stößt mich sehr ab, weil wir sind nicht alle Migrantinnen. Ich bin ein Tourist. Es wurde beschlossen, diese symbolische Aktion hier mehr oder weniger befristet zu halten, damit man nachher noch an die Demonstration kann. Und nach der Demonstration gehe ich noch eine Sangria trinken und wenn ich Glück habe, kann ich noch ficken. Und die Leute in der Universität, das hat mit denen eigentlich nichts zu tun, weil wenn die das Gelände nur verlassen, dann werden sie sofort verhaftet und verschleppt und misshandelt. Unsere Situation hat nichts mit der Situation der Sans-Papiers zu tun. Und es ist sehr schwierig, diese Leute nicht als Objekte zu behandeln und zu Projektionsflächen für unsere guten Intentionen zu machen.
Yesterday and the day before, there was a summit. I don't know whether you are aware of that fact. Okay, the summit said they are kind of taking drastic measures about the strange league. And I said, anyway, our... what the different associations and the different ONGs are negotiating sort of with the government so that they can really permit us to get the residents.
Yeah. Die Situation, was mir erzählt wurde, ist schon so, dass Hunderte, wenn nicht Tausende von Menschen an der Grenze zwischen Marokko und Spanien jährlich ertrinken, oder? Also das ist eine tödliche Angelegenheit, eigentlich sehr widerlich und steht schon für die Politik der Festung Europa, wie es jetzt auch diese Tage in Sevilla beschlossen wird.
Bokodong ola sisa. Olukuni kadgeni tsiga tami farayana. Basi hada made ni begilala. Kei na hera soro ro mino. Wajibi bi wuli kayi ne sekere. Bokom go do le majama ne ngabi no do njugo nu ilu yo do njugo ye. Ibta sora tigi jena ni de ko ni ya do njugo yara ye. Kita jiga la ala na aduna gila suku mina. Kwa mkwani kwa nebami nyini olufe. Hene asro dweni ngu ni madia oluye. Kumi mea ke kuma ngu ni duna kaba. Kwa mkwani kwa nebami nyini olufe. Kwa mkwani kwa nebami nyini olufe. Kwa mkwani kwa nebami nyini olufe.
Okay, he said that that is what all what he had to say as message.
Thank you.
Oh. Okay, kinche. Oh. Okay.
Of course I'm not against the idea of Europe, not against the idea of any kind of like building something more than a nation space and like trying to an open, but it has to be open. And it's not, it's a prison. It's a prison for us, it's a prison for them who want to come, and it's a prison inside between us. Like the political construction of Europe is also a construction to divide us and like and not to make us live together. So that's what I think.
Que esta propuesta de red desobediente se lleve a los países y a las ciudades de origen de toda la gente que ha participado en la acción.
We think it's important to bring this network of disobedience to all of the countries from where we come from, all the people who participated in this action.
In fact, for them, I am in paradise. Yeah, Europe. If you, according to one of my friend, I think that as long as, okay, as soon as you get a visa in order to go to Europe, the very first day you get your visa, this is the beginning of your paradise. As soon as you go to the airport, as soon as you are in the airport, and I said, bear in mind that you are already in paradise.
Ich habe ja eingangs erwähnt, dass ich in einem Beratungsbüro arbeite, seit Beratungskaffee nennen wir das, seit 10 Jahren. Und von daher sozusagen auch tagtäglich mit Leuten zu tun haben, die unglaublich in der Klemme stecken, die von Abschiebung bedroht sind, in Abschiebehaft sitzen. Und wir da sehr oft erleben müssen, dass wir eigentlich den Leuten nicht helfen können, dass wir auch nur mit ansehen müssen sozusagen, wie Leute abgeschoben werden, wie Leute in die Verzweiflung getrieben werden, in die Psychiatrie getrieben werden, ja, wirklich fertig gemacht werden von diesem barbarischen, ich würde sagen, institutionellen Rassismus.
Je m'appelle André, je suis colombien, je suis à Genève depuis 14 ans, et puis je suis un sans-papier, entre guillemets, parce que moi je me considère un travailleur auquel l'État suisse ne voulait pas donner des droits. Moi, j'ai sorti de l'ombre il y a 2 ans. J'ai formé le collectif ici à Genève. Et puis, on va voir ce que ça donne, mais on ne va pas retourner à l'ombre. Ça ne peut pas continuer. Je pense qu'il faut se battre parce que on est des humains, on travaille et on a le droit d'avoir les mêmes droits qu'il y a un travailleur, n'importe qui travailleur.
My name is Jean-Philippe Chosy, and I'm a spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration. It's an intergovernmental organization. It's based in Geneva, and by mid-June it will have 100 member states. I'm a French national, and I very often meet some of my compatriots here in Geneva when there's a UN Open Day, for instance. And people will come up to me and say, migrants, we don't need migrants, do we? Well, I will tend to say to them, well, you know, do you want to retire at the age of 60, 65, or 70? Do you want to have to pay, you know, to go private when you need health services? Do you want your children to have access to quality education? Do you want basically the acquis sociaux, as we call them in French, the socially acquired benefits, to stay in place or not? It's a choice of society. If you want this to stay in place, then you've got to think of an alternative, because the population in France is getting older and older. There are fewer and fewer people who are contributing to the pension fund. So what are you going to do? It's a choice of society.
Also IOM steht für den Begriff Migrationsmanagement. Und Sie haben auch den Auftrag bekommen, als zentrale Agentur, transnationale Agentur, dieses internationale Migrationsmanagement an zentraler Stelle zu betreiben. Das heißt 2 Punkte. Nämlich einerseits die Leute, die nicht gewünscht werden, außen vor zu halten, alles dafür zu tun, dass die Leute nicht reinkommen. Andererseits eine kontrollierte, regulierte Migration auf den Arbeitsmarkt, soweit er hier erwünscht ist, dem zuträglich zu sein und dafür Rekrutierungsprogramme bereitzustellen.
We know that there are some needs in these economies. What we're saying, what I'm saying to my French compatriots is, you know, don't turn your back to migration. Don't say you don't need migrants. Because in the end, someone will have to do the job. Someone will basically have to keep the system working.
Aber was heißt das? Das ist der Versuch, Migration allein auf die ökonomischen Bedingungen der vor allem westeuropäischen Staaten, sage ich jetzt mal hier, zuzuschneiden.
Italy a couple of years ago recognized that there were some needs in the labor market for qualified and not so qualified labor migrants to come over to Italy for 3 years to basically fill in these needs. What we do is, in the case of this labor migration program between Albania and Italy, in Albania we have an office in Tirana. We had an information campaign nationwide to tell would-be migrants that there was a possibility for them to go and work legally in Italy for 3 years. So then we went through, you know, we had about 35,000 people turned up to the IM office. We interviewed these people and we created a database, you know, name, age, training, speciality, language skills, etc., etc. And this database was basically placed afterwards on the website of the Italian Labour Ministry. And would-be employers would look regularly at the website and identify suitable candidates.
C'est là où il y a la discrimination. C'est là où il y a nettement, comme si les personnes qui viennent de tiers monde, c'était un supermarché, qu'ils vont avec les chariots, ils prennent ce qui les intéresse, c'est tout.
Also No Border ist ja der Name des Netzwerks, den wir uns gegeben haben, natürlich, weil es als Titel auch Programm ist und korrespondiert sozusagen mit der Forderung nach Freedom of Movement, dass wir sagen, wir wollen nicht dieses Grenzregime, also diese Festung Europa, wir wollen aber auch kein Migrationsmanagement, das diese Abschottungspolitik mit neuen Rekrutierungsformen kombiniert, sondern wir wollen sozusagen die volle Freizügigkeit für alle Menschen auf diesem Planeten. Jetzt kann man sagen, das ist utopisch. Ja? Genauso würde ich aber auch sagen, dann ist die Forderung nach sozialer Gerechtigkeit für alle unter Umständen utopisch.
Ouais, moi, mon nom c'est Tarek Kaoutari et j'ai 41 ans. Et donc je suis un des responsables du MIB, un des porte-parole du MIB. Notre principale préoccupation c'était d'essayer de faire en sorte que les gens s'émancipent là où ils sont. C'est l'émancipation des gens qui nous intéresse. On parle de l'immigration, on parle des jeunes issus de l'immigration en termes de victimes. Comme il se passe un peu, bon, ici ou ailleurs, je veux dire, c'est comme ça. Souvent, c'est les pauvres sans papiers, c'est les pauvres immigrés, tout ça. Non, c'est pas comme ça. Nous, on veut l'égalité, et l'égalité, c'est le respect, voilà, le respect des gens qui veulent partir pour faire manger leurs enfants, c'est noble, en vérité. C'est bien. C'est quelqu'un qui n'est pas resté à rien foutre, tu vois, qui est resté là, tu vois, et qui est là à pleurer misère et tout ça. Non, c'est quelqu'un qui essaie d'aller vers... qui essaie de créer son destin, même individuellement, personnellement. Et on arrive en Europe, ils arrivent en Europe, donc les gens, tant bien que mal, et tout de suite, c'est ou la case prison, ou un peu on les criminalise.
Wenn es jetzt diese Globalisierungsbewegung gäbe, ob das dann zusammenkommt mit den Auseinandersetzungen der Leute in den Vorstädten, das weiß ich nicht. Inhaltlich denke ich, hat man vor allem den Bezug der Migration, weil das ist die migrantische Bevölkerung, die hier wohnt. Wenn es mir gelingt, mit Leuten ein Vertrauensverhältnis zu schaffen, damit ich mit ihnen sprechen kann, sie nicht als Objekt betrachten oder eine Projektionsfläche, als das revolutionäre Subjekt, das jetzt da in diesen Vorstädten haust und nur wartet, die befreiende Lehre zu erfahren.
Toute une idéologie sur la domination capitaliste, tout ça, machin, tatati, tatata, que nous, c'est pas notre expression, c'est pas celle-là. Alors nous, on va pas passer... Si tu veux, simplement parce que genre, on est des gens qui combattons dans nos luttes, nous, il n'y a pas des gens qui sont au-dessus de nous, qui vont nous expliquer la politique, qui vont nous expliquer l'idéologie internationale et la création du monde et tout ça. Non, c'est pas comme ça. On l'apprend petit à petit, ça. Chacun l'apprend à son rythme. Et donc voilà, c'est comme ça. Il faut que tout le monde respecte ça.
It was the same discussion we had for the G8 with the migrants in France. Like, they want to come, they work with us. In our towns and in the country, but they didn't see why the G8, why they had to come here. Of course, they didn't have to. But at the end, some of them came here, and like we began to have contacts around the G8, and then maybe coming back to France, we are in France, coming back to our territories, we could share this experience also. So it's a first step.
Vorstellung, dass die Grenzen unterfallen und die, sozusagen die reichen Staaten überflutet werden, von, das ist ja schon in sich ein Stereotyp. Und arbeitet mit Angst, arbeitet mit Misstrauen, arbeitet mit Neid. Ja? Ich denke, wir müssen auch da, obwohl es ja so nie passieren wird, aber auch da entgegenhalten, in dem, was, also warum ist denn nicht mehr vorstellbar, dass wenn Leute zusammentreffen, es vor allem Reichtum entsteht?
Like, just imagine, we would have people from everywhere, like, I don't know. And then, oh, I don't know, just let them imagine the country. They, most of the people of the north are afraid of people coming from the south, but they have the experience of going everywhere as they want. If you're from the south, you just need so, you have to work so hard to move from your country. It's something incredible just to imagine this. You can just cross the border, you have a passport, you don't need visas from most of the countries in the world. So just, this is what I imagine, like my friends from the south that can like cross the border and go everywhere. I just don't care about those who are afraid.
Might have seemed sort of slightly contrived to have this message to the police in the end, but we somehow thought that that footage needed to be included, and we never really were able to fit it in a in a sort of more structured manner, so we just decided that we'll make it as an epilogue. The last scene, I mean, it's two different situations that are cut together, obviously. The theatrical, well, they're both quite theatrical, but the non-violent theatre takes place in a square in Strasbourg in 2002, and it's mixed together with footage from a raid on the Convergence Centre during the G8 in Geneva in 2003. No, it's two different situations.
I think it's a wonderful counter-information film on the theme of free movement. To say really one, I tried hard to find some critical points. Maybe there are two. The first one is really what you mentioned, the scene in the final scenes. Not that it's a problem that you can't understand it, or you can't. I just supposed that it could be Strasbourg and Geneva, but that's no problem, not knowing where that is. But to have these riot pictures, like in every of all of these anti-globalization films, is kind of a cliche also. So that's one tricky point. And the second one is a formal one. You have these subtitles, not everywhere. And of course it's not only in this case of this black guy, but it sometimes appears that you want to paternalize and explain his bad English. And so I was wondering if it could also be possible to do subtitles in all of the cases, so you don't have the difference between something you have to make kind of into a pure, transform into pure English.
Can I just say something to the subtitles? Because we have been, you know, we have been thinking about this a lot, and it's actually, it's not, he doesn't always get the subtitles, and also some of the Maria also gets the subtitles at some point because it's very bad sound. It's good that you say that because that you immediately had the feeling that it was kind of, it might be a little bit paternalistic, because we tried to avoid that by making sure that everybody that where there was really bad sound got it, and so we showed it to people that didn't speak English, actually, to one or two, or that weren't so good at English, without subtitles, and they found it difficult to understand. But yes,
also to that comment. Of course, we discussed this a lot when we were making the film, and a long time before we got to the point of subtitling, we knew that we had a situation, so we already discussed it during the editing. But I don't know if you noticed that we actually subtitled it literally. So we didn't because we also went through this, should we now subtitle him in proper English, or should we just put the words as he spoke them, and it was exactly the words that he used. It was just to sort of provide, you know, a little bit of support for the viewer. But, yeah.
I'm sorry.
I hate something like this. Yeah, okay. The things which are said in the last part of the film, for me, more are really based on the theme of the documentary. And on the first, in the first part of the movie, it's more of the events happening, but you don't really know about what it is happening a little bit. So I think maybe the... I'm not sure if I would, if much people will look at it as long when they don't know about what it is. So I think it's very important to do it at the beginning of the film, What's the reason for doing these things, these events and this movie? And I don't understand what the end should be about. I think for me there's no reason for the scenes on the end. I think it's better to publish them anywhere else.
What was the first point again? Until a week ago, the film had a lot of text-tafel, like text to explain exactly what you were saying, but we took them out because we thought that during the church occupation, that especially two of the people quite sort of literally spells out the situation, and we decided against that because we thought that that would be a little bit too sort of patronizing towards the viewer to sort of say again that, you know, oh, here are these people, they're occupying a church in support of the people who are occupying the university, because that's exactly what the people in the film are saying. But it's quite interesting because from the very beginning we were thinking exactly like you are now, but I mean, this is one of the things about, you know, sitting inside a film, and it's very difficult to imagine what it's like on the outside. And to the issue with the police raid in the end, well, first of all, it's like, you know, we discussed this, and like you say, you know, all these movement film has some sort of violence in them, and we discussed this a lot, and it was like, you know, not again, fuck the police. And then we decided, well, fuck the police, you know. And because the film is about freedom of movement, and also the you know, the connection to freedom of information, because this is a convergence center. It was a media center that got raided there, and that little point that it has in relevance to the film is this illustration of the problem of being able to do anything, because as soon as you try to do something that is not, you know, strictly according to the book and does not conform to the rules, you have this situation. So all the kind of thing, like, in, we didn't show the people that got beaten up in the church occupation. We didn't have footage of the eviction of the university occupation, which took place with what is it called, equestrian police, like they're using horses, and like it was a very violent eviction. So we just decided, well, fuck the police.
Do you think that's really constructive?
But it felt really good, because I mean, you know, this is also this is another situation with what is this film? Is it for people who are inside this social movement, or is it for people who are outside who are going to watch this film? But because the film project that we did before this one, we all had very traumatic experiences in Geneva at two G8s earlier, and then this thing happened again, and we were with a group of people who were also still dealing with the trauma of 2 years earlier when this happened again, and we somehow also just included it for our own therapeutic reasons, because we want to share this sort of experience with other people so that we don't have to deal with it on our own. It's selfish, yeah, maybe, and silly, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should think about taking it out or putting it in the end as its own piece or something like that. You know, on a DVD that you make, you can have it as an extra file or something. It's good to hear the feedback.
I think I have nothing against showing violence or fuck the police, but I found the last piece not very motivating, and that's a general problem with actions and demonstrations. Okay, if there is a powerful demonstration perhaps at the end, that would be perhaps more motivating, but even then the question always comes, what is the effect? And what I would find more motivating is to show some action where there is some effect. And so I'm not very familiar with this topic here, but I know, for example, in my city, in Bremen, there was once... there were migrants from Lebanon, and they the state decided that they couldn't stay in Bremen any longer. And then there was a demonstration of several hundred people, and they really blocked also the access of the police to these people. And in the end, it was decided that the people can stay. And this is kind of example where this is really motivating, because with action, even possibly with violent action, that depends, of course, on one's viewpoint, whether one would support that or not, you can have some effect. But just showing some play where people shoot around and so on, it's not so motivating, I think.
With the violence, because I was in Strasbourg, and after this theater of the police, they are starting repression against the demonstration. But this affected not only us, it affected also the immigrants in the suburbs, and they get police power there, and afterwards they didn't want to work together with us anymore in the camp. And I think this is a really important point to reflect.
For me, it was really a strange feeling to see that film, because it told a story that I've heard many times before, because I'm part of it. You know, the story of all this circuit of global protests. Some of these protests and some of these initiatives, I've been there in person physically, and other things like the scene in Geneva where the police raided the Lusine, which was the Indie Media Center. That's something I just experienced through the internet because I spent 5 days just online all the time reporting about these things. So I heard when this happened, other people were spreading the news about it through chat rooms and websites. So it was all very much my own story, but filmed by people that that I wasn't in touch with while the story developed. The question whether it is a film for people inside or outside, it's a question that comes up quite often. Do we want to preach to the converted? And I think it's a non-question, because I think there are many people who are on the fringes of a movement, or who take part in one thing but not in another thing. Like, many people work with the No Border Network but not don't go to Dublin to protest against a EU meeting. So I think lots of us who are connected through that network, maybe through several nodes, need to know the story told in many different ways. So in a way, I wouldn't see that film as one film that stands for itself. I see it more like a chapter in a book, which is quite a big book. I think I found it quite soothing not to have the text happen. Maybe there could be other forms to provide that information, as a manual or, you know, something that comes with the film in the CD or something. But because I think it tells a story about a movement, I think the police raid has its place in the end. Because all these things, it was a film about no border issues, about migration, which is only one strand of this global movement. But it is very connected to it. The demo pictures were all from big protests, which were not just about migration, which were protests against basically the Bretton Woods organizations and global governance. And I think that film showed very well how one single issue, like migration, links in with these big protests. And if it is a film about a movement that's emerging and constantly changing, I think the police violence needs to be in there. What I was missing was, maybe it would be nice to show in the film what Martin said earlier, that it was an independent media center that was raided. And also something that he said earlier about, well, it's not enough if bits and bytes can travel. People need to travel as well. I'm not a film person, so I don't know how to visualize things. But in a way, when the film ended, it seemed to me that it was really crying for a sequel, which would be the same thing with a focus on free communication.
Marion said everything that I wanted to say. Maybe just to affirm you, no text offering. It's not, obviously the film is not it's not a project of enlightenment for the society. It's not Naomi Klein's La Toma, which should be an alternative blockbuster. It's more a trigger for discussion, like your reaction, saying that their story is longer and there are some problematic aspects, and yeah, as a trigger for I don't want to use the word communities, but what Marion called an insight with some what was the word, margins or fringes, yeah. That's it. Not and text often are really for a big public. That's not the reason for the film.
So I think it's not a question of if the film is for inside or outside the movement. Because I think it's about, the question is that it has to be a good film, and then it doesn't matter if it's for inside and outside. And I think it is a good film. It has got many parts that really work from how a film can work, which is in this case the montage of the people and of their messages. And I love the part of when Hagen of the montage with Hagen and the guy in the white suit, and I think you should maybe, and this is, I think, was something that really goes straight through the film, that you make your statements by starting and finishing a scene and by taking out something. This is really clear, and I really like that aspect of that film. And maybe if you deal the same way with the last part of the film, with the violence, and with the two scenes, if you just try to put another perspective of the two situations, or just leave out the feeling of the subjective of the camera, there's suddenly a break that you that for the first time in the movie. The violence gets directly into the camera. Before there, the camera is really sort of distinct or relaxed, and so I think this makes a big break emotionally in looking at the pictures, and maybe if you keep the distinction between the different scenes also in the last part, this could change it tremendously.
Thank you.
After having heard this, that the story continues, that there has been some problematic aspects in the end, I find it quite problematic to not to show this in the film, but to let the film end just with this scene there and without the... Yeah, but...
It started when we crawled down from the trees, and it will probably end if we crawl back up there.
Of course, you. Now I'm just taking the microphone because I can. I thought of something in discussion earlier, and I thought I'd like to say that and sort of hear, you know, some response, whether you think that sort of makes sense, but kind of the idea that to make the link between free software, indie media, and freedom of movement, I had this idea that free software puts software in the commons, and indie media puts the media or news in the commons, and freedom of migration or self-determined migration attempts to put space in the commons, because that's actually, well, that's for me like a very important thing, is something real as well, and something very fundamental. And I wanted to see whether people can see this analogy or not.
Well, there was one aspect of the Strasbourg border camp that was thinking in exactly that direction, and I think there are lots of people who are trying to do that right now. In Strasbourg, the idea was to bring together people who think about free movement, who think about free communication, and maybe more importantly, who run projects related to one or both of these issues. And one of the outcomes of this initiative, it was a call called DSEC, which stands for Database Systems to Enforce Control, which refers to the Schengen Information System, which is in Strasbourg, and it's a database for storing data about migrants mainly. And the idea was to, what happened in Strasbourg as a result of that, partly, was that there were lots and lots and lots of computers, lots of people using free software, playing with free software, doing radio shows and so on. So it was a bringing together of a community which is very media and technology based, with a community like the No Border activists and the migrants who are very much migration based. The trouble is that the both things remain very separate from each other. But I think that the next possibility to bring it together is, one of the next possibilities is, for example, during the outside the European Social Forum in London, where there is an initiative about communication rights, and there's also an initiative about free movement. So talk to me later if you want to know more about these places to discuss it.
If you want a copy of this wonderful film.
Yes. It came to my mind again and again, in the background of the Strasbourg pictures, you also saw the bus of public theater coming caravan. And it's maybe concerning also these, of course, they mixed these media things with the practice of moving of a nomad movement. And for me in the film, it was very important that not for instance, with Negri and Tart and in Empire, you have this mixing up of forced and self-defined migration. You have this figure of the revolutionary subject, and it's very important that the film makes this distinction between, I would say, migrants and nomads.
Just before you say something, I would also, if any of the sort of more long-term ökonuxes has, you know, something to say to this idea of freedom of movement, I'd be really interested in hearing that as well before we stop.
I want to add something to this movie, because there was shown some protests like the Strasbourg border camp or Sevilla, the protests against the EU summit, and with all what's happened around, and also Geneva, and I want to add that there are really a lot of more movies was produced all over the world about the border actions, and that one of the questions when we talk about this connection about freedom of movement, freedom of communication, and also about intermediary, it's one point we always forget. It's about the hierarchies inside the movement, and also the promotion of the videos, and how, who is talking inside the videos and about which topics, and which videos are used very often to show and which are not used very often to show, and I think this is one of the problems we have with this material, that there are very big kinds of hierarchy, because some movies are promoted very, very strong, and some other footages are not very strong in this movement. And I can see about the Strasbourg border camp that this was the thing, the idea to connect people of the anti-globalization movement with the freedom of movement, like the border network or migrant groups, and also in the media or the network of free communication. But these are processes are going on for years already, and we also have to focus that when we show this and we say that this was this point, this idea, and have these things happened after, then we have to know that there is a process going on from people all around the world who do dealing with this, and we really have to think when we talk about these violence topics, that this kind of violence is going on every day, everywhere in the world, and I think that this movie cannot show this in the way I like to see. But if we have a lot of movies and different information, then we get a better picture what's really going on and what's really mean the connection between freedom of information and freedom of movement.
Well, yeah, I totally agree, and I think you should go and make a movie then. I mean, this is three people spending their money instead of going on holidays and instead of going to the pub. It's just like one little postcard. It's very difficult to make a film that says everything, isn't it?